Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. As many of you know, Alan is a private investigator and he gets called to duty, and he's currently on a plane to Texas this morning to find a teenage girl struggling with some mental health issues. And so we wish Alan the best in finding this young girl and getting her the treatment she needs. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, this show will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addiction, and so much more. We will introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family. With our experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are all working to make this a better place for all of us. So Alan's out in Texas and hopefully finding this young girl. And for those of you who don't know, Alan and I have worked together helping teens for the past 20 years. And our topic today, how to raise a happy teen, is one Alan and myself are very, very, very familiar with. As most of you know, Alan's raised two teenage boys, and I've got my daughter, Eden. And as I mentioned, we've both been working with teens for a very, very long time. Today's exciting because we have a show dedicated to focusing on the needs of these teenagers and bringing in a talented writer and mother to help us out with this subject. When I think back to my private practice days and working with teens, I couldn't help but really struggle with all the false assumptions and myths that parents and teachers come up with regarding teens. I'd routinely hear my son or the student is lazy, they're unmotivated, they don't care, or they're a bad kid. And the parents would routinely ask me, you know, if it's nature or nurture. My response was obviously, it really doesn't matter because either way, nature or nurture, it's your fault. Truth is, parents really do play a huge role. And hopefully those listening today can really learn a lot and take some time to think about their kids and the roles that they play with them. Speaking of roles, you know, I do a lot of work with my patients on the roles that they play in their families. And each of us play a role and often get stuck in these roles. Some of our kids are the people pleasers, and some are the inattentive ones that act out in ways of trying to get attention and whatnot. Others play the victim. And these roles can be determined by birth order, by gender, by chance. But our family members play these roles basically unconsciously. And it affects everything from their mood to their self-esteem. And playing the role of mother, writer, and educator, and most importantly, special guest today on today's show, we're going to bring in Christy Halverson. Christy is a freelance writer, blogger on family and raising children. She writes at These Are My Favorite Things. She's also a contributing author to the online blog magazine Ruby Girl, a website that's geared specifically for teenage girls. Most importantly, Christy is a mom raising these incredible teenagers. As we know, parents in the trenches are the easiest to relate to. She's entertaining, and her wisdom-filled articles are a source of inspiration and guidance for moms and dads across the country. So without further ado, Christy, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt.
Well, we're very, very excited to have you. And the thing that jumps out to me really is that you've taken a very active role in parenting, but more importantly, in educating parents, you know, across the country via blog and via your writing. What basically got you into kind of, you know, expressing your knowledge and teaching us all?
You know, it's funny. I started my blog more as a way to document the life of my family, and like a lot of moms out there who have blogs, to kind of capture the memories of the funny things my kids were doing, the funny things they were saying. I never in a million years imagined that I would be writing things that other parents would turn to for advice. I tend to write kind of more as a way to encapsulate my beliefs. When I wrote a post a couple of years ago that went viral on how to raise a happy teen, and when I wrote that post, honestly, I did not ever think anybody would ever see it. I wrote it simply to document the phase of life that I was in with my teenagers. And I wanted to remember how I parented them and how I believed. And when it went viral, and when it was shared so many times and so many other people believed in it, it kind of opened the door for these other writing opportunities where I could kind of share some of my experience and my wisdom with other parents out there.
Well, I've been fortunate enough to read How to Raise a Happy Teen, and in that article you discuss the 7 steps, which, you know, are outlined in there, and it's really wonderful, and it gives great advice to parents. What kind of initiated you to break it down into steps?
You know, I didn't intend to do it. It just kind of came out that way as a part of the writing process. I identified 7 things that I felt were critical for the success of my family. My kids have been relatively easy teenagers. We've had a lot of the normal things that families with teenagers face, and we've been fortunate enough to not have any really serious, critical, tough issues that I know a lot of families face. So I broke it down basically into 7 steps that I was doing, 7 things that I was doing that I saw was helping my family and helping me as a parent to love my teenagers and to do a better job of helping to guide them into fully functioning, productive, happy adults.
Your first step, love them fiercely. Is this something that, you know, is a struggle you feel for a lot of parents out there, or is it just kind of innate in nature to just really love your kids?
I think it's in our nature to love our kids, but I think it's really hard as a parent to show that love. Mm. I think when our kids are getting all A's on their report card and they score the winning goal in their football game, it's easy to love our kids. It's easy to show that love. We're proud. They're making our job easy. I think it's tougher when our teenagers are angry and when our kids are making choices maybe that we don't agree with. I think those are the times that it's tougher to love them, but I actually feel like that is the more critical opportunity that we as parents can step in and do a better job. We need to let our kids know that we love them unconditionally. That love is not contingent upon good choices. It's easier when the choices are good, but I think it's so important that our kids know that we love them no matter what they do.
Completely agree. The second step is basically to listen. And for a lot of men and women out there and parents, it's probably one of the more important that I read of in your writing. But why, you know, how do you put that really into practice with teenagers?
Oh, my goodness. I think you have to have a good relationship to start out with your kids. They need to be able to trust you. If they don't feel safe coming to you with their problems, they're not going to. They're going to seek the advice of their peers, or they're going to not seek anybody's advice and make their choice the best way that they know how to do. I think it is really important that we listen to what our kids have to say. Friend drama is everything to teenagers. I have a teenage girl, and frequently there will be friend drama in their friend group and things will come up and she'll be frustrated and she'll be angry. And it's important for me that my natural instinct is to turn into the mama bear, mm-hmm. that I want to protect my kid. And, yeah. and when she comes to me with her struggles, I'm angry at the people that are hurting my child, or I want to react. And I think as parents, we need to step back and withhold the judgment. Our kids aren't always looking for advice from us. Sometimes they just want to vent. They walk in the door at the end of the school day and they've had a tough day, and maybe they just want to tell you about it. They don't need you to fix it. They just want to talk about it. I have found with my kids that there is a precious few minutes right when they walk in the door after school that they'll divulge the secrets of their day with me. If I miss that opportunity, by the time I do get home or I get around to making the phone call to say, hey, how was your day? Oh, fine, nothing happened.
Right.
I found that you have to be there and be willing to listen right when they walk in the door. Otherwise, you miss out. One of my really good friends picks up her boys from school every single day, and her son just graduated and she's got another one in high school, and she makes it a point to be there every day after school to pick them up. And she's had opportunities to get that information from her kids, but she's also been able to be a witness to things that is that are happening in their life. She's on that high school campus and she sees the types of people that her kids are interacting with. She sees things going down. At one point, this dear friend of mine even witnessed a child that she saw on the school campus witness somebody trying to sell drugs to other kids. Wow. And she knew this child, and she immediately pulled him aside and said, "Hey, what's going on? Are you okay?" And he was reacting so negatively to what he'd just seen because he didn't know how to process it. And it was so important. I think it's just so important that we are involved in our kids' lives, that we listen, that we talk, and we communicate. This friend was able to call this boy's mother and say, "Hey, just heads up, this is what he just saw at school." And when he got home, he was able to then dialogue with his own mother and work through some of the feelings surrounding what he'd just seen. I think we've got to listen to our kids. We've got to be open and be able to talk to them and communicate at their level. They aren't fully formed adults yet. They don't have the life experience that we do, and they need our help, but they also need us to be a listening ear to them. One of the other things that I've tried to think about with my kids is when my son walks in the door at the end of a tough day and he drops that backpack in the middle of the room and the shoulders are slumped, it's easy for me to say, "Hey, pick that backpack up. What are you doing? Right. Pick up your shoes. Stop making such a mess." And instead, what you need to see is, "Hey, this story is telling me something about his day." And I like to try to think of it as though I would treat my kids in the same way I'd treat my spouse. If my husband walked in beaten down and dropped his bag and sat down with a sigh, I wouldn't nag him to pick up the bag. I would say, "Hey, how are you? What happened? Are you okay?" And I think sometimes as parents, we're focused on things that are not as important because we're responsible for keeping the house going. We're responsible for teaching them to pick up after themselves. And so I think it's easy for us to get caught up in that rather than step back and see the bigger picture and be there for them and what they're going through, in addition to teaching them those lessons and how to pick up.
You know, when you were discussing the listening thing earlier, in that example, what came to my mind was, as a parent, you're so quick to try to fix and solve. And to be able to really sit back and listen without comment, I think is a skill that for me would be something I need to work on and I would struggle with. But it's the same thing as the teenage boy walks in the room and he drops his bag. He's expressing something nonverbally that right now, you're right, tonight now's not the time to go over our cleaning rules of the house, but now's the time to say, "How you doing?"
Exactly. Exactly. These kids are under so much pressure every day at school. They are facing so many challenges that I didn't have to face as a teenager. And I think we need to be a support system for them. I think it is important to teach them how to be neat, how to be tidy, how to pick up after themselves. But I think the bigger picture is always the one that I tried to focus on with my kids. There is something, like you say, those nonverbal cues are telling a story. And if it were our spouse, we would behave differently. So I've tried to treat my teenagers with the same respect that I treat my spouse. I don't nag at my husband to pick up his pants off the floor when he leaves them in the bathroom. I don't nag at my husband to put his shoes away. However, I'm not always that great. I do nag at my kids occasionally, but I try to treat them with the same level of respect that I do to my spouse and that I would want them to treat me. Maybe I left something laying out and I've had a hard day and I just need a minute to sit down and process it. I think mutual respect and treating them not like a four-year-old is a hugely important thing to do.
And you touched on their lives being so stressful. You know, there's an article I read recently on learned helplessness, and it compared an adult and a child's life, where an adult, if they're driving and they've got, you know, the oil light comes on in their car, they could go to a professional to fix their oil. And so they learned that there's resources in their community. When it comes to kids in school and homework assignments and learning concepts, they don't have these outs that we have as adults. So there's just this tremendous pressure to solve everything on their own, in addition to just the social pressures of being a teenager.
Absolutely. They are under tremendous pressure socially from their friends. And in addition to, I think nowadays, as parents, we've kind of turned into a society where we're focused on that ACT score, and we've got to get them into the best college, and we've got to get the grades where they need to be. And all of those are good things. But I think your point of adults, we have an out and kids don't, is so important, because I do think that sometimes you need to give your kid an out. Sometimes you need to give your kid permission to take a break and not worry about it. And you do that by communicating with them. You do that by being involved in their life and being aware of the struggles that they're facing. And it makes it easier on them as well.
Is this what led to your third step in the concept of saying yes more than you say no?
You know what? This is my favorite step of all of the steps, because I think it is the one that is the most important. Our kids are going to be swimming in a stormy sea of you're not good enough and you can't do it for the rest of your life. As an adult, sometimes it really does feel like the world is against you. You don't have the mom to come home to at the end of the day that says, you're amazing, you're great, you did a good job. You come home to yourself. And I think our kids need us to be that force in their life. We need to be the ones to tell them that they can accomplish it. And we need to be the ones that believe in them. I'll never forget an experience I had with my husband. He grew up in a family with parents who were dreamers. They encouraged their children to do whatever they set their heart on. They wanted their kids to dream big, and they did whatever they could to help them accomplish those dreams. And he and I were talking as we were newlyweds and we were on a road trip, and I made the comment to him that I didn't really think one person could make that big of a difference in the world. In all reality, I probably to some degree still think that, but he turned to me and I'll never forget the tone of his voice, and his hands were so tight on the steering wheel, and he looked at me and he said, "Don't ever tell our children that." He wanted our kids, and he's right, and I want this too. I want my kids to believe that they can make a difference in the world. I want my kids to believe they can change the world, because if they don't believe that, they won't try.
Right.
And I think we have to be the person that says yes. In my home, I have my middle son is a creative thinker. He is the boy that comes home for the science fair in sixth grade, and everybody else is making a poster that details how much sugar is in the different types of drinks, or documents, different laws or whatever. And this kid came home in sixth grade and said, "Mom, I want to build a hoverboard."
Wow.
And I looked at him and I'm like, I don't even think that's possible. And my husband was right there and said, "Absolutely, Chase, let's do it." So Chase got on the internet and he found a plan, and he bought a bunch of scrap plywood at Home Depot, and he used a leaf blower and some duct tape and some plastic. And this kid built a hoverboard that, when we turned on that leaf blower, ran around our garage and spun him in a circle. And it taught him that he could accomplish whatever he set his mind to. He is always trying to do stuff like that. He'll come to me and say, This summer, for example, he and his buddies built a boat, a fishing boat. And I've learned, because of these experiences, that my husband has helped me to see things from his point of view, that I need to step back and let these kids go. I would say no because of the mess, or maybe the expense of it all, or maybe it's just something that seems like it's going to be a huge pain. And my instinct is to say no, just because, like, don't do it. Now find something else. And my husband is the one that says, no, absolutely, you need to say yes. And so we've really tried to parent our kids with the belief that they can accomplish anything that they want to. We moved to Texas, where we currently live, a couple of years ago. And my oldest was a sophomore in high school. And it was an incredibly tough time to move. moving as a teenager is almost the most devastating experience they can go through. And he came to me the first week of school and said he wanted to try out for the football team. And I don't know if you know anything about football in Texas, but it's practically religion. Its own religion. Yeah. It is. It's insane. We just had our first football game of the year at the Cowboys practice facility on Friday night, and I had to buy tickets from a scalper to my own high school football game. It's insane. So this is a child who's never played football. He's athletic. He played other sports, but he'd never done football and certainly never done football in Texas. In Texas, they start them when they're three. So I was terrified. I wanted to tell him no. I wanted to protect him from what I imagined was going to be rejection and hurt and pain, both physical and emotional. But I didn't. I said, that would be great. You'll be awesome. And it was awesome. It was the best thing he could have done. It gave him a built-in family in the friends that he made right away on the team. The coaches were incredible, which surprised me because I figured they'd be annoyed at this kid who didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
But instead, they worked with him. They gave him a playbook. They helped him learn to run the plays that the team, that these boys knew from the time they were able to walk practically. We have to not be afraid to take risks, and we have to help our kids believe that they can take risks. It's so important that they learn that they can do whatever they set their mind out to.
It's almost, when I hear you talk, it's almost like in some way we need to just get out of their way and not be preventative for things. But the other side of it, you know, which we get is then are we too free with our kids? And then how does, you know, we have a listener writing in right now in regards to this about, you know, how do we deal with the other side of it with punishment? Our listener, Callie from Arizona, and thank you people for calling in and writing in, says, my husband continues to get on my case because I don't punish our 14-year-old enough. When I think about punishment, just offhand, in my background, I've got a couple issues with it. One is I feel like punishment gets attached to the punisher. So the reason I'm not going to the party Saturday night is not because I didn't do well on my math test. The reason I'm not going is because of mom. The other issue I have with punishment is it's normally just during the duration of the punishment. So if, you know, as driving to the studio this morning, I saw a cop on the freeway, I slow down, and then once I get past him, I speed up again. And also a lot of our kids are kind of immune to punishment. They've internalized this, you know, quote, bad kid thing. And so my quick reaction to this listener email is slow down on punishment, but at the same time, we've got a lot of kids who probably do need some structure. So I'm curious your thoughts.
You know, I absolutely think there is a time and a place to say no to your child. I think it's your job as the parent to say no. And when they break the rules, I think it's your job to help them learn that there are consequences to their actions. Life is going to hand our kids a whole lot of consequences, and some of them are going to be tough. I think the mistake that a lot of parents make is that we should avoid punitive parenting. And when I say that, what I mean by it is that, let's say your example of your child didn't get a good grade on the math test. Okay, so give me your phone. I'm going to take away your phone for 2 weeks. I think how is the consequence of that action related at all? I think as parents, we don't know what we're doing. And I will be the first one to tell you, half the time, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm struggling and swimming and doing the best job that I know how. But I think what we need to make sure that we do is that we're focused on teaching our kids instead of punishing them. I think if you take away the phone or the car or you ground the kid, it's more of a punishment for you. Yeah. It makes your life harder. It makes things more miserable for you. I this is a little confession here. I've actually never had to ground my kids. And I know that people are probably writing in as we speak saying, I have no experience, I have no room to talk. But what I would say about that is that we haven't had to. We have such a good relationship with our kids that I think sometimes our disappointment is enough.
Yeah.
And you can tell. You can tell when you've gotten to your child and when they regret that their actions have caused the consequences. And I think that doesn't work for every parent. And I know there are a lot of kids that have tough relationships with their moms and dads. And you do. You have to enforce consequences. We've been extremely lucky. My parents weren't lucky. I was that kid who was grounded every week. My parents would ground me a minute for every day I was late past curfew. And I don't know that that was an effective, I think that was the best tool they had in their tool belt right. as parents. But for me, I wanted to parent a little bit more deliberately. I wanted to teach more than punish. And I think we just need to avoid being punitive for punitive sake, because I think what that does is that harbors bad feelings in our children, and our kids then feel negative towards us and they react and then they slam doors and they get angry, and we lose the ability to communicate when our kids are that angry. So does that mean that I think we don't punish? Absolutely not. I think you have to take each situation line by line and try to figure out the best way to teach your kids what you're trying to teach them at that time.
It seems to me, based on what you're saying, really it's key to have the relationship first. And then in your step four, which I think ties into this really well, is there's two main areas where the no really does come in, or that line is drawn. And that is really when there's a physical or moral issue with a decision they've making or something they want to do.
Absolutely. I think that we need to set up rules to keep our kids safe, and we need to keep our kids morally safe, and physically and morally safe are the things that I think we are here to protect our kids from. I think whatever those rules are in your family, you need to decide that. For me and my family, I don't want my kids at a party where they're going to be forced to make a choice about alcohol in front of their peers at age 16. I don't want to put them in a position where they have to face that. Do I keep my kids from parties? Absolutely not. But I talk to the parents who are the parent of the kid throwing the party. I know my kids' as friends. I get information, and then I make a decision based on what I think is going to keep my kids safe. I think you have to say no to whatever you believe is going to cause your child harm, whatever that line is. In my home, I don't want my kids drinking. I know there are a lot of parents who will say, oh, as long as they're doing it in front of me and I can keep them safe, that's fine. That's not okay with me. The legal drinking age is 21. Right. I don't want my kids drinking. I want my kids to be safe. And I do what I need to do as a parent. And sometimes that does involve making your child unhappy. We can't say yes all the time. We have to say no. We have to protect them and do it in whatever way we know how.
You don't want them drinking, which I completely agree with, but one thing you do like to do for them is feed them. In one of your steps, I know you talk about that, and it sounds like building a house that's a place they want to be is important.
Oh, absolutely. I think that you need to feed teenagers. You need to make your home be a place where your kids and your kids' friends are going to want to be. I came under a lot of fire in my article because people felt like I was advocating to eat sugar and soda and crap all of the time. And that's absolutely not how we live our life. All three of my kids have done athletics. My son, as I mentioned, did football. My middle son is a cross-country and track runner at the varsity level, and my daughter dances on the drill team. These growing bodies need proper nutrition. They need to have the nutrients that are necessary to help their growing bodies and to fuel them for the activities that they do throughout the day. My kids have a really long school day. They go to an early morning religion class at 6 a.m. and they don't get home from school till about 4:30. And then they've got homework and practices and everything on top of that. They need the fuel to compete and to be able to power through the day. But with that being said, I also will make a batch of cookies, pull out the Oreos, order a pizza when I know their friends are going to be around, because the friends will want to be there if the treats are there. And if the friends want to be there, then you get to kind of have this little window into what's happening in your kids' life. You get to see them in their element. You get to see who they're hanging out with and who's influencing them, because really our kids' friends are some of the biggest influencers in their life. Whether we like that or not, it is the truth. And I think you need to make your house be the party house. If you have the means, put in a pool. get a ping pong table or put in the newest gaming system. Teenagers are drawn to those types of activities, and I absolutely recognize that most people don't have the resources for that. So I think you have to do whatever it is you can afford to do. And if all you can provide is a welcoming atmosphere and a package of Oreos, then I think that's enough. I think you, the bottom line is helping your kids' friends to feel comfortable in your home, to know their names, to know what activities they're involved in, and to be a resource for your kids' friends as well.
Amazing stuff. Again, we're here with Christy Halverson. She writes that these are a few of my favorite things, and also contributes to the online blog and magazine Ruby Girl, which is a website that is specifically geared towards teenage girls. We are going to take a brief break and be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Welcome back to Answers for the Family. I'm your co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. And again, we're missing Alan, but hope he will be back soon. Before we bring Christy back, she mentioned the football stuff, and I did want to share some of my thoughts on teenagers in regards to really this idea of competition and personal best. And I think that there's this notion in our world that it's very competitive and it's a very kind of dog-eat-dog world. But I really think that we have to think with teenagers, really, that they have a few years before they enter this world. And even in, you know, the research, there was a study done by governments that jobs in America are less than 20% based on individual performance and less than 1% based on meeting an actual personal quota. So most employments are cooperative environments, not competitive. And people that lose jobs or are not able to attain jobs are really because they lack motivation and competence. And most importantly, for what we're kind of discussing, is having real poor interpersonal skills. So when we're looking at raising kids, our focus really, if we look at being more looking at your personal best, children basically don't always have an equal environment to do in school. There's kids who are not competing and aren't trying hard, and so you don't even have an equal playing field without it. So what we really want to do with our teenagers, in my opinion, is emphasize cooperation over competition. Competition is a learned behavior. In the preschool that my daughter was at a couple years ago, you see kids being very cooperative, not competitive. And then once they get older, towards first grade, it starts to be competitive towards others, where you'll say, "Daddy, I jumped higher and faster than Jake." And so basically, it's something that we've created, and it's a learning environment. But individuals in which success is measured by what you do is more important than how others do. So with that being said, I think it's important that we encourage our kids to do their personal best versus competitive best. And I get on my soapbox, Christy, but these things pop up for me and it triggers something. And I think it's important that, you know, we put up our kids' artwork and we focus on them versus others. Cause a lot of the studies done on happiness really, and for instance, sports, you know, the sports that people are happiest with are sports that you compete against yourself, whether it's running or golf, but stuff where you're really kind of, you're going against and doing the best you can do versus kind of leveling yourself against others. So just a few thoughts, and welcome back, Christy.
Thank you. I absolutely love everything you just said about that. I think that is something that is so easy to forget in the society in which we now live. Athletics is a huge focus. Club sports has gotten so competitive that if you don't put your child on a team before they start kindergarten, they will never play on their high school team. It's insane. And I've seen firsthand the beauty of working as a team and cheering everybody on. My son runs on the cross country team at his high school, and he happens to run at the varsity level and is incredible, but he wasn't always that way. When he first started running, it was almost comical. He was about 9 or 10, and he had a really negative experience. He'd tried to play soccer, and he wasn't any good at soccer, and he didn't like soccer. And so then we thought, well, let's try basketball. And he was so uncoordinated, basketball was almost worse. And I had a good friend who she'd been a cross-country and track athlete herself at the collegiate level and was kind of training her own kids, and invited my son to come and run with her son at practice. And we laughed to this day about his gait was so uncoordinated. His elbows were flailing and his limbs were all over the place. And she worked with him. She did drills where he would just lift his foot over and over and practice. How does that foot need to hit the ground? And the first time he ran, I think he maybe made a half a lap around the track, and it was good enough. It was okay. And he got better and he practiced. And now I go to the cross country meets, and it's amazing to me to see these wonderful coaches that my boys are lucky enough to be working under, who will be running with the guy that's at the very end, the last guy that crosses the finish line. These coaches care just as much about him as they do the boy that crosses first. Amazing. And I think the lesson that we need to teach our kids is that their best is good enough. And it's okay if they don't play sports. It's okay if they don't score the winning goal. It's okay if they're not the best. I think what's important is we give our kids experiences and opportunities to grow and to become good at something, whatever that something is. We always tell our kids, you have to have a thing. We don't care what that thing is. That thing might be marching in the band. That thing might be writing for the school newspaper. It might be playing on the football team. Whatever that thing is, you need to have a thing. You need to have something that you're working towards and practicing and being a part of, because it helps you to develop those skills of dedication and effort and time that you're going to need later in your life. These extracurricular activities are so important for our kids, but I think we as parents get caught up in the competitiveness of it, as you say, where we want them to be the best. And if they're not the best, then they're not good enough. My kids love that movie, the Ricky Bobby Talladega Nights, I think the tagline is, if you're not first, you're last. And we say that as a joke in our family, but my kids know that it doesn't matter whether you're first or last. What counts is, what did you put into it? What was your effort? How much did you give? Did you give your all? Then that's good enough.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, ties into a question I get asked a lot is, you know, how to motivate your kids. And I think if, you know, a kid has something that's theirs, and it's not set up, it's in a competition way, but as a personal best situation, motivating a kid gets a lot easier, especially when you're going with what their interest is and their thing is, versus yours or, you know, society's.
Oh, exactly. I think one of the biggest mistakes we make is trying to mold our kids into what we either were or what we think they should be. I think if your kid is into Pokemon Go and that's their thing, then you be into that with your kid. I think we need to take what our kids are interested in and make those our interests. When my son started playing football, I didn't know anything about football. I hardly ever watched it. I had never known the nuances of the game. And I said to him at one point, hey, teach me about football. You have never seen anybody's eyes light up more than my kid that day. This was his passion. This was the thing he was the most interested in. And I was asking him to share it with me. I think we need to do that with our kids. I think that helps motivate them if we're interested in what they're interested in. If we make their passions our passions, it creates an opportunity for us to bond with our kid and to build a good relationship and to show them that we love them. I think at the end of the day, that's what they need more than anything, is to be loved and validated. And when we get involved, and we and without pushing. I think a lot of parents will push. They'll push something on their child, and hey, why don't you keep trying? Why don't you keep trying? And there's something to be said for letting your child drive it. I think it is so important to just let our kids be empowered with the ability to make the decisions. And if they are choosing something, then we need to support that, and we need to move heaven and earth to make that dream happen for them. We've got to, as I've said before, we've got to get out of the way and let them fly.
And for you, was working with your kids, was letting them guide, letting them kind of pick their activity and doing what related to them, and then investing in as a parent, was that where you feel that they were able to be motivated and, you know, and kind of get the energy and the gasoline behind it?
Oh, absolutely. I think nothing motivates like success. Once my son started running and could actually make it around the track a couple of times, it motivated him. He liked it. It felt good. Nobody's really motivated to do something that's hard, right?
Right, or that they suck at.
If you can't make baskets, you're not motivated to go out for the basketball team. But I think what we need to do is to give them the opportunities in whatever area it is. Not everybody has the budget for club sports, and my kids have played very little club sports simply because we've been able to get them connected through other ways. But I think you have to do whatever you can do in your budget and do whatever works for your family to help motivate your kids and keep them going. My kids have all picked their own thing. When Chase, my middle son, the runner, was starting to go to practices with his friend and starting to get a little bit better at running, my daughter decided to try. This boy happened to have a girl that was her age, and she said, she hated running. It was miserable. She did it for the social factor, but she wasn't committed to it. She wasn't motivated to do it. And so she found something else that she liked more. And we supported that. We'll be there to help our kids do whatever it is they want to do.
And where do you think, I mean, you've had such a great run with your three and really done an excellent job. And a lot of the parents that come in have just unique challenges that I think can be kind of summed up with, you know, whether it's fighting over tidiness in the house or being able to do social things with their friends. Where do you see the biggest struggle with your kids and with the people that are on your blog?
You know, I think one of the biggest struggles that parents face is the teenage bedroom. I have one child who makes her bed every day before she goes to school, and that is abnormal. Most teenagers leave the clothes in piles on the floor, leave the papers around, they don't empty the trash, they don't want to clean their bathrooms. It's a disaster zone. And I think it can be really easy to see when your child drops the backpack in the middle of the room or leaves their shoes in the kitchen that they're lazy. I think it's easy to tag that as irresponsible. And my advice would be to ignore it a little bit. I think you need to focus on what's actually important. If your kid walks in the door and drops the backpack and you know, plops down with a sigh, I think that's telling you a bigger story. I don't always get it right. I had an experience with my oldest when he was in middle school, and he walked in the door after what had been, unbeknownst to me, a really tough day. And he plopped his trumpet case down in the middle of the room, took off his shoes, and started to pour himself a glass of milk. And he spilled that glass of milk all over the counter, and I lost it. And I yelled, and I'm like, what are you doing? And pick this up. And then my anger kind of translated into me getting mad at him for a list of things that weren't even related to this offense, where, oh, and make sure you're going to get this done. And by the way, you need to do this. It kind of became this tirade. And he just, sweet boy that he is, he took it. And he just sat there, and I watched tears fill his blue eyes, and I was devastated. It was a sock in the, it was a punch to the gut and a total mom fail. And I realized in that minute that I blew it. But it wasn't over. That's the beautiful thing about parenting. The sun always comes up. We get another day. And I immediately apologized, told him I made a huge mistake, walked over, put my arms around this boy that I love more than anything, and said, I'm so sorry. How are you? Are you okay? How was your day? And come to find out, he'd had a horrible day. He'd not done as well on a test that he thought he would. He was struggling under the weight of a few projects that were coming up. He was feeling pulled in different directions by some issues going on in his friends. And I wasn't there to help him. I only saw the mess, and I didn't see the boy. And I really tried to remind myself of what is an embarrassing and painful memory as a parent, because I think we can learn from it. I think what we can do is not sweat the small stuff. I really, truly think parents need to let the bedroom go. I've had friends whose kids have gone, yes, I really do. We need to let it go. I've had friends whose kids have been preparing to leave for college, and these parents have just lamented and yelled at the kid and said, your roommate is going to hate you, and you're going to be the kid that is the biggest slob. And every single one of these kids has figured it out. And I made the conscious choice years ago that I will not have a bad relationship with my kid over a pile of clothes.
Yeah, I don't think it is
not worth it.
I don't think there's a correlation between being able to clean up your room on a daily basis and future success in this world.
Absolutely. And I truly think that the time to worry about that is when your kid is in a good enough place to be responsive to it. About once every 7 to 10 days, I will say to my boys, I'll happen to walk by their room, notice the state that they're always in, and say, hey guys, let's try to get this cleaned up today. And because it's not this running loop of a nagging mom, my boys will, okay, mom, we'll do it. But if you say every day, is your room done? Did you get your room clean? Did you get your room clean? I mean, think about us as adults. Mm. You've had a tough day. You've got the pressures of life. Sometimes you do just want to sit and relax and not think about it. And you know in your mind, I'll get to it later. And I think teenagers are no different. Yeah, they might come across as inherently lazy, but they're actually people just the same as us. And I think we need to treat them with the respect we'd want to be treated. The flip side of this coin is I think it's important to teach our kids to work. I don't think we can be the type of parents that do everything for our kids and do their laundry for them until they are 18. I had brothers who were in college, and my mother, bless her heart, was still washing and folding their clothes, and these were adults. And we make our kids start doing their laundry the summer before eighth grade, and I do it not because I don't want to do it anymore, although it's a blessing to not have to once they hit that milestone, but to teach them and to teach them with me there, to teach them how to work the machines, how to time manage, how to kind of stay on top of it. But at the end of the day, when I hand them this responsibility, if they run out of clean underwear, it's on them, not on me. They have a choice. They either can do their wash or wear dirty underwear. And it helps them to learn without me having to nag and do it. So I would say, pick your battles, pick the appropriate time to fight them, decide when it's worth it to go head to head with your kid. And I think there are times that it is, and I think it's important and it's necessary, but I don't think it's every single day. And I think we as parents need to just decide when that best time is for our family.
Christy, your honesty and knowledge are incredible, and we're so lucky to have you. We're running out of time, but I do want to allow – we've got a bunch of listeners that have been typing in questions, so I want to get to at least one if you don't mind. And our writer, Beth C., wrote in before last year, when my daughter turned 14, we were very close and had such a fun and wonderful relationship. I now feel like my world is upside down and a total failure. She has entered this rebellious stage, and it doesn't matter what I say or do. She is rejecting, making fun, or ignoring me. As a single parent, I am truly struggling. Do you have any guidance for me?
Oh, Beth, my heart aches for you. And in my experience, 14-year-old girls all feel that way. My daughter is almost 15, and I feel like we're starting to see a little bit of the light at the end of the tunnel, but that's a totally and completely normal phase for them to go through. Do not feel like you're doing anything wrong. Don't feel like you are failing. You are doing a great job. What I tried to do with my own daughter, there were many nights that I'm wringing my hands and I'm crying to my husband and I'm saying, she hates me. She thinks I'm an idiot. What have I done? What happened to our close relationship? Give it time. Love her. Just be patient with her. She will come back. I think they all kind of swing back. My experience from my own family and talking to friends who've parented girls is that this is a phase that girls go through. And I think it's normal. And I think it's part of them figuring out who they are and what they believe and what they want to be. And I think a little bit of that is deciding for 5 minutes that we aren't what they want to be, because they're not sure what they want to be. And so I think they put this distance between themselves and their mothers to kind of say no, and they push back and they kind of put a distance between us where previously we were close. And it's hard, and it makes you feel like you're failing, and it makes you feel like you're doing something wrong. I would say you're not. Just give it time. Just love her. Love her for everything that she is, and love her for who she intends to be. Sometimes their actions aren't lovable, but I think we've got to let our kids know that we love them no matter what, and we've got to be there for them even when these times are tough. I would say avoid the slamming doors, yelling relationship, because I just don't think that's going to be productive. That's going to cause hurt feelings on her part. It's going to cause you to feel frustrated. You need to be able to dialogue with your kids, but also give them a little bit of space. When my daughter was going through that, I kind of just maybe let her have a little more space than I would have wanted to. Maybe not ask. I didn't ask her quite as many questions and try to be as involved in her day-to-day social interactions. What I did is I kind of stepped back and I found that she would come to me and she'd notice that I wasn't there sharing and that I wasn't there pestering and pecking, and she would kind of miss, I think, having a sounding board or having a dialogue, and she would come to me. I think it's totally normal. It's hard. I think that is one of the hardest phases of teenage life that there is.
You have given us more education in the last 50 minutes, and we are so appreciative to have you on, Christy Halverson. For those of you interested...
Oh, thank you for having me.
Of course. And those of you interested to learn more and read more, you've got a couple options. There is stiethoughts.com, www.stiestouughts.com, and that's where these are a few of my favorite things is. You can also read... Christy's stuff on rubygirl.org, www.rubygirl.org. Christy, such a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt. It's been a pleasure for me as well.
And please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday, September 5th, when our guest, Kate Sukel, founder of the award-winning family travel website, Travel Savvy Mom, will join us to discuss her new book, The Art of Risk, The New Science of Courage, Caution, and Chance. And if you missed or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And the next time you're on Facebook and Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check out some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word. We hope Alan returns next week soon, safe and sound, gets that girl back into a safe place. For all you listeners out there, thank you and have a wonderful day. You listened to Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polachek, only on LA Talk Radio.